to Beyond the Ring, a podcast that covers all things in the stock show industry from the informative to the insane, starring Ryan Rash.
The two most powerful warriors are patience and time.
And Dale Hummel.
Nobody cares what you start, only what you finish.
Now on with the show.
Welcome to Beyond the Ring. This is Dale Hummel with co-star Ryan Rash.
Hello, hello, hello.
It is time for current events, and there are many, many, many current events.
You're so worried about. It's just World War III. Just calm down already.
I believe it is World War III, just in a different, not in traditional sense. It's the best way for me to put it. When Biden doesn't respond or doesn't work with Israel to respond with the retaliation against Iran after what went on, that concerns me. We already portray enough weakness on the world stage that this just continues. And I can only imagine when Iran thinks about it and how many terror cells have come across the southern border that are here right now. It's just like anybody can do anything to us right now and there's no repercussions. Concerns me.
I'm very well aware. You didn't even know it was happening. I had to tell you.
You did. I don't know what I was doing at the time, but you weren't even near a television. You figured it out.
No, it's these wonderful little things. I send you these like notifications on your phone. You should try using your phone for more than just calling somebody.
I should. Well, I think about the position Iran was in when Trump left office, and now what the position of Iran is at with Biden administration, and they are blaming Trump for pulling out the nuclear deal, somehow causing this, which is ridiculous. But Trump did pull out of that. We quit giving them money that was doing no good in terms of blackmailing us to supposedly slow down their uranium enrichment program, which did no good. When Trump left office, Iran was broke. Oil prices were down. Trump made it very clear to any other country, if they were to do any trade with Iran, they would not trade with the U.S. He had them strangled in terms of a cash flow situation. They could not buy missiles. They could not fund terrorist groups around the world. Now we have Joe's energy policies pushing up the oil prices. We have Joe releasing billions of dollars supposedly for humanitarian aid. And Iran will come out and tell you that they're going to use it for whatever they want to use it for. And I can't imagine how that could be regulated. So it's an absolute mess.
Yeah, my whole thing on all of this is he can blame whoever he wants, but I don't think that's going to work, because just like he blamed Trump for the economy and all this other stuff, like somebody is not brain dead in the White House. I don't know who is not brain dead, but somebody, because like last year, it was all Bidenomics is working, all this other stuff, whatever. And then they figured out that wasn't actually, the American people weren't buying into that. And so since the start of 2024, do you know how many times he said Bidenomics? Twice.
Twice. That was probably an accident.
And so there is somebody that is not brain dead. So they'll try this for a little bit, then it won't work, and they'll move on to something else, blame somebody else. But the whole Trump blame game, it is not working anymore. Like, it's just not. And they try to blame him for everything this administration does, but it's not working. Because I just saw a poll last night, and it was, how do you remember, like, what were your thoughts on Trump's presidency? And 47% of the people polled said that they had fond memories of Trump's presidency. So now, granted, that's not 50%, but that's a whole hell of a lot more than I thought it was going to be.
It's a whole lot more than what you're going to get from Biden's presidency here in a few years.
And so I really think they would just be better off just like, not even blaming anybody, just try to fix the problem. Like, this is a problem. We know it's a problem. And don't tell me that you and Netanyahu are going to have a come to Jesus meeting or whatever. Just try to fix it. Don't blame anybody. Just say, you know what? We are working on it as best we can, and we are going to try to rein this in. Like, I think that, I think if they just did that, people would be very satisfied. Like, we get it.
I believe so. And what I could tell on the news late last night and this morning was coming out of Israel, not from our administration, but Biden was very clear he was not going to partake in any type of retaliation in any manner. And just like what you said there, except here's a problem with Iran. When they make a bold direct attack on Israel, like they have, that is unbelievable. I mean, they've had proxies attack Israel. They've had terrorist groups around the country attack different embassies and different military installations. But when they unleash 130 drones armed with missiles, 120, I believe, ballistic missiles and 30 cruise missiles, that is unprecedented in terms of the number of missiles that were launched against Israel. And we're sitting back. Supposedly Israel's an ally of ours, obviously. We seem to support them on many levels as one of the only democracies in that region. And we openly come out and state that we're not going to assist Israel in any manner in a retaliation against Iran. I would take it right now, Ryan. Here's Iran, obviously a bad country in terms of, I'm not saying they're people, but those in charge, and they've been the largest supporter of terrorist groups around the world for many, many years. They're obviously trying to align themselves with China and Russia against the West and form that coalition as best they can. There is nothing good happening there. Instead of backing away from helping Israel, why wouldn't we take advantage of the situation right now and completely take out Iran to the level that you would hope for a regime change, that the people appear to be fed up with those in charge? Let's go ahead and take those in charge out as best we can and give them a chance for regime change. There is no reason to allow them to continue going forward as they have, and we have the best excuse right now to jump in and pound them as hard as we need to get things accomplished.
I'm not disagreeing with what you say, but Biden's just a coward. And so when you have that in there and as the leader, things aren't going to work out. And I think the most ironic thing that they're blaming Trump for this. Okay. So one of the biggest narratives that was pushed when Trump was running for president originally is that he'll go to nuclear war and all this other stuff and yada, 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 whatever. No. So we went through 4 years and we didn't even have a national, international conflict whatsoever at all. None. Nothing. Like, he made great strides in trying to get peace over there in different treaties and all this other stuff. Biden's in there. And I mean, it's not just Iran and Israel. We got China and Taiwan. We've got Ukraine and Russia, all this other stuff. Like, they know he's not going to do anything about it. And if the United States isn't going to do anything about it, probably the other countries aren't going to do anything about it either, because they look to us for leadership, as it is well known that the president of the United States is basically the leader of the free world. And guess what? Yeah, that's why all this is happening. But it's Trump's fault.
Okay. Yes, it's Trump's fault. No, that is so well put. And I remember it really well. That they were coming in and talking about just how nuclear war, how this was going to end everything, and he was going to get us into this war and that war, and the exact opposite, because of his show of strength that we don't have at all right now, it did work. And you're so right. People are not concerned with anything they do to us or our allies at this point, because Joe has no reaction. I mean, it's something as simple as that Chinese spy balloon. Let that come all the way across the country before we do something about it? Right. I don't understand, Ryan. There's something very serious missing. I understand Joe's cognitive abilities are gone, but there has to be people around him that realize this is not a good idea. I don't understand why they would take the position they're taking. There's no logical sense in it whatsoever. Yet it continues.
It's not to get him reelected, I assure you. That is
no. No, I agree. So what could it be? There's no way people can make this many bad decisions.
Yeah, and then we've said that, so, I mean, from the Afghanistan botched pullout on. I mean, that was kind of his first big FUBAR thing. And like from there on, it's just over and over and over again. And that's why I have always said, and I still want to believe that they're not going to run him, but it's just like they're running out of time. But I don't know, but the whole, it's all a mess. I think that as a country, we would just rather have him get up there and say, you know what? This is not a good situation, and we're doing the best that we can right now, and we are working on it. Just reassure the American people that they are trying to do something. He didn't even speak that day.
No, nothing.
I don't know if he's spoken about it yet.
I have not. No, there hasn't been anything on it. Nothing. All we're getting is reports out of Israel with what his administration is informing them that they're setting this one up.
And then Trump that day has this huge rally in Pennsylvania. Like, I mean, like back to the 2016 rallies, huge, whatever. And he talks all about it, but no one's hearing anything from the actual president. So it's just like upside down and backwards, but you know, it is
upside down and backwards. You have Trump going to trial right now on what they call their hush money trial. That is complete crap. If he wasn't running for president, this would never have happened. And you've got Joe sitting in the White House doing absolutely nothing while the world's on fire. You want to talk about backwards?
Yeah, it's truly a screwed up world that we're living in right now. But I just keep thinking that every day that something devastating that at this point, and this is going to sound really bad and probably, I don't even know how to describe, but like, I am just counting the days to the man doesn't get reelected or doesn't run. And then I think some of us would have, but like, I am counting the days mostly that something devastating doesn't happen on American soil. Like, the Iran-Israel thing is terrible. I know that you love the little Ukrainian guy. Whatever. All those other things. Like, I'm saying the stuff that's going on in the rest of the world is bad. I am very, very afraid that with all these migrants that have come across the border and all this other stuff and all these other countries being trigger happy and whatever, that we could have something devastating happen to us on American soil. And every day that either this election is here or they pull him out, I just very grateful that something hasn't happened yet.
Now, and it's just a matter of days. I hope I'm wrong with that from the standpoint that the FBI directors come out and warn the administration that we're in trouble. We don't know who's come across the southern border. Ryan, look at it this way. Look at China alone. They completely control who comes in and out of that country, especially their citizens. In the number of Chinese that have come across our southern border, that isn't an accident. That isn't something that they're going to allow unless there's a reason behind it. I'm not saying that every Chinese that comes across the southern border is here to do harm to our country. But I can assure you, China's smart enough to put whoever across that border they want in place here. I can assure you the Middle East is doing the same thing, particularly Iran, and we continue to allow it. It's a matter of time. There is no way. Think about how concerned we have been with terrorist cells since 9/11 and so forth, and how few were in the country to accomplish that. Think about the magnitude, the number of terrorists that are potentially in the country. They are. There's nobody can deny they're not here. It's just at what number and when will they try to do harm? And when we portray this weakness, just like we did over this Iran-Israel situation, why wouldn't they? So we have Iranians here in the country in a terrorist cell that decide to take out something in our country. Is Joe going to do anything about it? Is he then going to unleash our military on Iran? I don't think he will.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
It's wearing on me. I can assure you that. Should we move on to some good news?
Oh, there's good news?
Yeah, I have a public service announcement.
Oh, great.
ChatGPT.
Oh, Jesus.
I actually have been using it once in a while, Ryan, not just screwing around, sending you topics and things, but had an example yesterday. I went to fill a prescription for malaria pills that my doctor had sent in because Chase and I are going to Africa. We're wanting to make sure that we're up to date on everything. And there was a vaccine, a typhoid vaccine that evidently I have not had. I probably shouldn't have went to Africa the first time without it, but, all of a sudden it hit me. I'm at the pharmacy and they want to give me a vaccine. And I do not want to take any without doing some research. So I went to AI and they gathered all the numbers that they could find from a research standpoint, put them right in front of me so I can make that decision very quickly. It was good.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter, Katie, tells me how convenient it is with schoolwork.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. I think the younger generation has discovered it to be much more beneficial than we have at this point.
Well, Dale has not shared much of his agenda on his trip that he's going on, but I almost sent this to you yesterday and I didn't. But so his plan is to go to Africa with Chase and they're going to camp out on top of a car and look for watering holes. Well, I was, you know, playing on social media and I saw one of these African water holes and a hippopotamus chase the boat.
I did see, you do see that on social media in the case. We're not going to be in a boat. We're going to be in a truck, uh-huh. Not in the water, in a truck.
Yeah. Okay. Cause the hippopotamus can't get out of the water. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
You are welcome to come along if you would like.
No, not doing it. Not doing it. Not doing it.
Well, it is an unstable place in the world. Everyone, I think that listens is probably we're preaching to the choir here, and they understand where we're at. But I do hope something can change. I do disagree, Ryan. I worry. You want to see Biden replaced or whatever in terms of somebody taking his place on the ticket. I don't want to, just because I'm afraid that person will be much more difficult to beat than Trump or for Trump. Than if Biden stayed on the ticket. But the polls, depending on which side you listen to, looks like to me the battleground states are still in favor of Trump, but some are saying that things are tightening up, which I cannot imagine that. But I do become concerned, as I believe Joe Rogan had mentioned in May, they plan on switching him out, was his prediction. I don't know if that's based on anything whatsoever, and a lot of people have talked about it. I just hope they don't. I would like to see him stay on the ticket.
I'm not saying I don't want him to see him stay on the ticket, but I think for the world and for this country, if it comes out that he is no longer going to run and they are going to run somebody else, I think a lot of this shit will stop.
God.
Because they know then that no matter who wins, somebody probably ain't going to take this bullshit no more. That is my point.
No, I agree. And I think it was Katie that asked me yesterday, if they replace Biden with somebody else on the ticket and they win, will they do a better job than Biden? The answer to that is it has to be yes. I mean, there is no way to do worse.
Yeah. Yes. So anyway.
It is time for some BTR JLA.
Yeah. Junior cattle, top 10 in the nation. First place, Lacey DeSmith of Arizona. Second place, Bronson Campa of Arizona. Third place, Garrett Roush of Ohio. Fourth place, Bailey Stowe of Arizona. Fifth place, Abigail Koning of Texas. Next is Kinley Stowe of Arizona, followed by Ariel Elliott of Texas. Emma Hill of West Virginia. Easton Zerbach of Oregon, and Paisley King of Texas.
Congratulations. That wasn't bad, was it? Not all one direction.
Yeah.
Well, it is Waterboy time.
I know.
Show Fresh H2O for the win as the best return on investment. Look at this as a low-cost insurance policy that is going to help keep Show stock on water when away from home. Hydration is the key, and Show Fresh H2O can be purchased at your local farm store, Show Supply Trailer, or at SwampFox.com. Thank you, Show Fresh H2O.
Yay!
It is time for a very long-awaited topic that Ryan wanted to talk about. I thought we talked about it a little bit, but he assures me we did not. Shows pre and post Rona. What was your official title for that one, Ryan?
The Rona Effect.
The Rona Effect. I just about forgot it. Well, you lead me into this because you are at more shows. You're seeing this more than I am. When you brought it up to me, I was in a position where I did not argue with you, but in the shows that I'm going to, it wasn't maybe as noticeable. But please lead us into it.
I think that there's several differences about shows before Rona and after Rona. And I just thought it would be interesting to bring it up. And, you know, we do get feedback from our listeners every week and throw some of this out here because I think first and foremost that the average stock show family or person has no idea how close we came to losing this whole deal during Rona. Like, I do not think that they have any inkling on that. And I am going to tell you it was close, very close. And the thing that the biggest effect that I can still see of the post-Rona world is our numbers are still not back to what they were beforehand. And, you know, I'm not saying that you see that as much at like a Louisville or a Kansas City, but at the county fair and the jackpot show level, and I would say even some on a state fair level, you do see it. And Dale, well, you can argue that, but you don't go to those things, so you wouldn't know.
No, that's a good point. And I do see that. I don't get to as many of those as you do. And I guess I wasn't thinking on that level. I was thinking about more mechanical changes that the show was making. But absolutely, in terms of numbers, I have a theory on why. What are your thoughts on why you think the numbers are less post-Rona?
Well, first and foremost, I don't know the exact timeline, but for over close to a year at least, a lot of shows got canceled. And the most shows that got canceled, I think, were ones that had premium or auction sales attached to them. And I do believe that while I know this isn't everybody, but there was a considerable portion of the people that show that depended on that, either that premium check or that sale check to buy again for the next year. And when we didn't have that for a year, I think that is what took the biggest chunk of people out as far as exhibitors.
No, that's very possible. And those exhibitors could have bought that animal, say it's just a county fair, already purchased the animal, and then all of a sudden the county fair doesn't take place, the auction doesn't take place. Hopefully they were getting a premium at their county fair, and now they're basically at the mercy of the market or market price. So yeah, I think that probably contributed, no doubt. I can add on to that I can remember having discussions, and it was more in a joking manner that, wow, if we're not showing livestock, we can do this family vacation or that, or there's a lot of other choices out there that I think needs to be a wake-up call for our industry to stay strong and continue to do better, because right now, more than ever, there are so many other things that can do. Not only other things, most kids are involved in so many activities. It's just a matter of cutting one activity out that's going to allow them to put more time into something else, if not choose something else. And we're in a very competitive field right now in terms of what time is allocated to different projects. And there's a lot of time that goes into the stock show world and the junior livestock world. We love it to death, and that's why we do this each and every week. But we have to be at the reality, if this industry does not stay strong and does not continue to be the building tool that it has been in the past, those families are going to go away and they're not going to come back. I don't know, Ryan, and you would have a better handle on it. Have the numbers bumped up, let's say, from last year to this year? We pretty much stabilized at a lot of those jackpot shows in general.
Yeah, I mean, it's still too early in this year to figure that out. But like, I think we've grown over the years a little bit, but piggyback off what you just said about the different things that you can do and all this other stuff. I think another point that people don't realize, and I think this is why some people haven't come back, this industry and this sport is not funded by anybody other than parents or grandparents or whatever. Like, all the feed, all the entry fees, all the show supplies, all the, that comes out of that family's income. Now, when you do other things like high school sports or UIL activities, all this other stuff, I'm not saying that you don't have to pay for stuff, but you do. But a lot of stuff, the school picks up the tab. Nobody's picking up the tab on the livestock show end of it, except that family. And so when you have all these different choices, then sometimes that comes into play. And like you said, while there is a lot, I think there's no question in my mind that you get far more rewards out of Junior Livestock Exhibition than you do all this other stuff that's cheaper. It does come at a cost. And see, you will probably argue with me some. I think some of the people that we lost, not besides the fact those that had to have that check to go back and buy one next year, is I thought we lost, and I still say this, I think we lost a group of people that maybe they weren't the national champions or the state fair champions, but they were right there. And they know enough to know the bullshit that it takes or that goes on to get from where they were to the next level. And they just said, I'm not doing it. So we're done.
No, I think there's something to that. I think you could evaluate that at every level, whether you're trying to win the county show, that jackpot show, the state fair or national show. But I think it applies more at that state fair and the national level. So you're not just talking about those that were recreationally very casually going to a show here. There are some that were running really hard that are no longer involved. Yep. No, I agree.
But as far as numbers and levels, I still think you're probably hit the hardest at county fair jackpot level. I think state fairs are getting back up there. And I really don't think you probably missed much at like those national shows. I think Denver's numbers are a little strained. I think that's more than anything, probably still the construction and all that other stuff and people making a choice that until all of that is up and running, probably just going to Cattlemen's Congress right now. But I think at the national level, those numbers have stayed pretty strong and pretty consistent. But the other levels, I can just tell you from when during Rona and the fairs that went on and the jackpot shows that went on, especially the jackpot shows, I thought those numbers were way bigger because there were very few of them out there. That was like
more concentrated.
Right. By God, we're going to have a show no matter what. There was very few of that. So probably during it, I think those numbers stayed strong. And I think at the county fair level, the numbers were probably even greater because, like I said, a lot of state fairs, a lot of bigger shows had to cancel. So you may not had a choice. If your county fair was open, that's all you could go to. You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Now, after Rona and everybody got back, the county fairs have been hit hard on numbers. And I'm telling you, every county fair I go to pretty much, they're like, well, our numbers are down. I judge all species at a lot of them, but I judge all species at different shows. And so it doesn't matter which one. Oh, well, we're down from whatever and all this other stuff. So I hear that. And so I don't think it's been built back up there. I think the jackpot show level, a lot of those long-standing shows that had been around for years and years, maybe they didn't come back or maybe they came back with new management and other shows popped up. So while I think there are more options now probably than ever in the jackpot deal because there are those options, I don't think there are those shows with as strong a numbers as what might have been before Rona. Like, in Texas and several places, I mean, there's shows that people go to for years that, you know, have 600 head or something like that. You don't hear about those much anymore, is what I'm saying.
I would agree. I think there's a few of those out there still, but not as many. And you're right. Maybe part of it is there. I believe in certain parts of the country, it's interesting to me how we see shift in where our sales are. Years ago, it was kind of Georgia and that general direction, California, maybe even a little bit before that, or the far West Coast. And now it seems like that Utah, Wyoming, Montana, Idaho, even Washington State, that area is really growing. And I look at it and I think it's because there are more jackpot shows to go to. Not saying there's as many people maybe hitting those jackpots, but more opportunities. And we've talked about this many, many, many times, but I think people are going to pick and choose and go to those shows that are well-managed, and they bring in the judges that they feel comfortable showing to. And with more competition, things get better and better. So there's a lot of hope, and I encourage everyone out there, let's, if you're thinking about putting on a jackpot, jump in, give it a try, and see if you can't get it off the ground. And that's going to allow us to pick and choose a little more, and hopefully those really good ones will continue to expand. So I'm good with that. Ryan, you haven't mentioned it yet. There's a couple things. The short-term benefit from the Rona effect, obviously, and we talked about this before, I believe. Do you remember just there when, during Rona and shortly after, when shows were still going or started back up again, do you remember how appreciative all the exhibitors were and all the show families?
Yeah, but that's gone.
Yeah, that left fast, quicker than we even thought it would.
Yeah. I mean, it was like a blink of an eye, but yeah, that was nice. That, you
it
know,
was.
Like,
it was good for a little while. We thought maybe it would stick around, but it did not.
Yeah, well, that was the one thing that I thought, if we ever get back on track and everything goes back to normal, and you knew it would, but could we hold on? You would have thought that, because not just stock show life, but all life had been disrupted and upended so much, that you would have thought that people would have been more grateful to get to do anything that they loved or liked, and that would have been a lasting effect. But no, it was not. It was there for a brief shining moment on a hill, and now it's gone. So bye.
It's gone. You mentioned Denver, the construction on the new facility, and I think we talked about it briefly. I didn't go in and take a tour of that new facility when we were there this past January, but wow, that looks really good. And the Rona effect on Denver, obviously the Cattlemen's would not have happened if it were not for Rona. Would you agree with that?
Well, that's why Cattlemen's happened, because everything else shut down, and Cattlemen's Congress decided, and those people decided they were going to have a show. Yep. I'm going to call a spade a spade. Cattlemen's Congress saved open cattle shows in America. That's just all there is to it. And you can disagree, you cannot like them, you can do whatever you want. But when this was happening, what got canceled always were open shows. They try to have a junior show for obvious reasons, but all the open shows got canceled. And Cattlemen's Congress saved open cattle shows in America. And I will argue anybody that tries to disagree with me on that. And we should, if you show cattle or open cattle in America, you owe a great debt to Cattlemen's Congress. And that's just all there is to it.
And I think they're seeing the benefits from it. Obviously, it continued post-Rona, and numbers still seem to be pretty strong. Very strong, actually.
Yeah, huge.
So yeah, so that but that obviously, I guess back to where I was, impacted show for sure in Denver, and the numbers have not bounced back there by any means. It's almost a situation where I'm not saying you can't show at both of them, but it's difficult, and it's very taxing to be gone that long and have the stock out on the road that long. All those reasons that, unless there's some separation of schedule, people are going to have to continue to make those choices. So it obviously impacted Denver quite a bit from that standpoint. I hope that as we move forward, and Ryan, I hope that you and I, or more so you, are wrong on those numbers, that maybe they're not down as much at the jackpot level. Maybe there's more of them. But the hard fact is, Ryan, and this is what really gets me and makes me more concerned, you're at as many county fairs as anybody, I would assume. Maybe not as anybody, but for the most part, definitely judging across the country as much as anybody. And when you tell me that you go from county fair to county fair, and for the most part, numbers are down, that tells me that grassroots, we lost quite a bit there. And it's going to take a while to build that back up. And to do that, we better make this industry the best it can be, or it's not coming back. And I hope it can. I know it can, but it's going to take some effort.
Yeah. So we've talked about, you know, just the numbers and the attitude thing. I don't know how to fix it. I won't. I claim to. I wish that attitude would change, where people would be more grateful. And anybody that has run a show knows exactly what I'm talking about at any level. It is absolutely a thankless job. But without those people that do it, whether they are paid employees of that show or they are volunteers, then we don't have these opportunities afforded to us to where we can go out and do what we love to do. And so my sincere wish is that everybody would remember that. And while no show is perfect and every show can do things better, there's very few shows that do every single thing wrong. Okay. I'm not saying there's not a few minute examples of that, but be thankful, be grateful, and, you know, just say thank you every once in a while to when you're at a show. Granted, there's going to be things that you'd like to see done differently, but they did some stuff right, and we should be thankful for that. But I don't know if that will ever happen, but that would be something to aspire to, I guess.
I think we're seeing it on some level. Just we need to see more.
And then I do think I'm going to talk from a Texas major show perspective now more than anything else, because that's what I see. That's what I do. That's what I know. I know that this isn't everywhere, but these are changes that I have seen in management and Texas major show level that I think probably at some point has affected every show or whatever. But when we did come back, for example, in Texas that very first year, obviously social distancing was still a thing and all this other stuff and yada, yada, yada. So some of this is stuck, is what I'm saying. We brought people in at different times. We made shows longer. We cut down the numbers, like, for instance, in the cattle, in steers and heifers at San Antonio and Houston, they're now waves. There's wave one and wave two. And we've always kind of done this in the hog show, but now there's wave one and wave two. So there would be less people in the barns, all this other stuff because of social distancing. And I think at the time we just were so thankful to have a show, it didn't matter. But these changes have stayed. And because I don't broke room anymore, whatever, I go to the shows, and I'm not going to tell you it's not annoying for me, because now we've got, you know, longer week than what we already had. But imagine having two or three kids and one of your kids shows first wave, next two shows second wave. You got to go back and forth, all this other stuff. Like, that's not easy. And things like that, I wish that we would go back to kind of where we were before, because especially at Texas major shows, those schedules worked for years and years and years and years, and everybody had got used to it and nobody complained. And one thing that I think we've also lost when we've broken this up is we've lost a little bit of the community standpoint and aspect, because, you know, when you were at Houston for a week for the steer show, for the heifer show or whatever, at some point you were going to get to see all your buddies and all your friends. Now, when you're broken up, what if they're in wave two and you're in wave one or whatever? So I see some effects in terms of, I think it's harder for everyone, including ag teachers, county agents. I know that doesn't matter a lot in other states, but we do have very active ag teachers and county agents in Texas. I think it's harder for parents in general. And I think that you lose some of the camaraderie and some of the community out of this whole deal. And so changes like that that have stayed, and I'm just using that as one example, that I think we should take a step back and probably reevaluate and say, you know what, this served its purpose for that time being, now maybe we need to return to where we were beforehand.
I would assume that the show management sees an advantage in it in some manner, or they would have flipped it back. I don't know what that would be, but yeah, it confuses me a little bit the way you talk about it. So I don't care which major we look at. So basically half the open or half the cattle breeds are coming in breeding cattle at one time and the other half. And after those leave were in the past, they would all come in at the same time is what you're saying.
Correct. Yeah. We'd all come in same period. And then you'd have, you know, two or three consecutive days of shows. Now we've got half of them coming in. We have to weigh and classify or check papers quicker, show the next day or the next 2 days, and then get out, and then they clean the barn and re-rack and do it all again.
There, obviously, it's not for I don't think it's for disinfecting or social distancing. None of
not
that
anymore.
Obviously anymore. But maybe there's a convenience issue or something on the management side. But you're right. Think about if you have a child or a couple kids showing different breeds that fall on the different waves, or that ag teacher or that extension agent, that darn sure is taxing. I get it. It makes perfect sense.
Well, and the one thing, I mean, and I don't know if this will help, but if they're going to keep it this way, and obviously the show management makes these decisions and they make them for reasons that they believe to be the best. But if they're going to keep it this way, like for steer exhibitors, let's just say, if you're going to keep it that way and you're going to have wave one and two regardless, then I think that you should like set what breeds are going to be where and say, this is it forever. Because if you're buying for three kids, then, and you know that these breeds are wave one and these breeds are wave two, then maybe you can buy all yours to fit that. So you all don't have to go back twice. Not sure you would, but you at least have that option and you would try it. And so stuff like that, I think, would help. But when it worked forever one way and everybody, and another thing, like, I'm not saying that we don't have webcasts and web streams and all this other stuff where you can watch this. There's a big difference watching your friend show online or being up there in the stands rooting for him right there. There's just a difference in that. And you can see it and you can feel it in the crowd because it's reduced by half and they're trying to get you out of there so they can get the next ones in there. And I mean, you want that electricity back that was in those stands at majors when you could barely find a seat, or you'd have to get up there at 7 o'clock in the morning and mark your territory off so you had a seat all day, etc. Because you wanted to watch your friends and all that other stuff. That part is missing. And while management may not realize that, it's a big deal. And I think that goes into kind of the attitude problem that we're seeing. That's just one example of how Rona has caused management to make decisions. And I'm not going to say their decisions are right or wrong, but made decisions, they've kept those decisions, and this is the effect of those decisions. That's what I'm trying to get across here with this topic.
No, I agree, and I see that. And I'm going to apologize, excuse me, to Ryan. When he threw this title out there to me, I don't remember my response, Ryan.
It wasn't very good at all.
It wasn't positive. I basically, to try to defend myself a little bit, when I travel around with our kids, whether it's shows that we're showing at, or I'm going to the Texas majors or the national shows to help other families and support other families at the national shows, for the most part, or the Texas majors or OYE, when I'm going there just for primarily the market goat show, those things haven't changed much. I know Houston and some of those went from, or San Antonio went from two-day goat show down to one. So we actually went the other direction, which I don't think had anything to do necessarily with Rona. But I didn't, when he brought this up, I said, well, Ryan, I don't from before Rona until now, those specific shows, I don't really see a difference. But he's educated me and opened my mind up, and he's right, particularly just seeing maybe a loss in numbers. And I'm not saying Rona caused it, but it allowed people the opportunity to maybe decide, okay, do we want to do something else? Is this exactly where we want to be? And even when he talks about the different waves in Texas and so forth. So there are definitely some changes. And I can guarantee you that when Cattlemen's Congress came on board and Denver dropped in numbers, obviously there was a big effect there. So there is a long lasting effect that's out there. I don't know that, again, when I was in my little world, just going to the national primarily market goat shows or majors, not a lot of difference. And I'm not getting to as many county fairs to visit with those people and notice the drop in numbers. So Ryan, you did well. I was confused when you brought it up. I thought, well, I don't know what I'm going to contribute to this at all.
And like I said, I'm just using the wave system in Texas in the junior breeding and junior market cattle deals as one thing that is different. And whether you like it or not, it is because of Rona, and it does have effects. And I don't think all of them are great. There's an advantage. You have more space now. That's what this time. And that is just one example, but there could be a lot more, but I'm not going to bore people with it because Dale didn't like this topic to begin with. But there are things that Rona happened to us, and we are still seeing the effects of it now for something years later, because, and the reason I thought this was a timely subject for us, at least right now, is we started this podcast this week 4 years ago. Rona had just shut down Houston and OYE, and every show in the world had, every jackpot show, every county fair that was up close had canceled, and it was all crumbling down around us. And we started this podcast right then, which I have no idea why we picked that time, but it worked out, I guess, in the end for us. But I thought that was a timely time, with this being the fourth year anniversary episode, moving in to our fifth year, to talk about this, because that will... those things still have effect on us. And I guess everybody throughout their lifetime has things that drastically affect their lives and all this other stuff. But I promise you, 20 years from now, there will be a large section of the livestock industry that is telling their children or their grandchildren about what happened during Rona to the livestock show. And who would have ever thought that? But that's very, where we are.
Very true. And this, we didn't plan to start this because of Rona, but I think, Ryan, just like you stated, the timing on that from a podcast standpoint and maybe attention that people were giving, okay, let's tune in to see if there's any news. Is this show going to happen? Or what's it? What are they talking about? When will this be over? All those things. It definitely helped our podcast get off the ground. And obviously there's a lot of choices out there, and I listened to a few more podcasts than I never listened to any prior to this one.
I do not listen to any of them.
I do listen to a few now, and I think it's really helped us. And I, as Ryan mentioned, this will be the conclusion of 4 years. I had talked to Clifton or Ryan was visiting with him. I think we're just over 1.2 million downloads on average per year. But that probably doesn't give you a real clear perspective. I think it's gone up each and every year. And I thank you listeners out there for tuning in and supporting this podcast. We enjoy doing it. We hope that it has an impact on, obviously, the stock show world. And it's been very good to us. So we look forward to year number 5. Ryan, have you talked to Clifton? Have we hit 5 million? Did I miss that one? Are we close?
I don't know. He's not here. So We're recording and he's doing other things, so I don't know.
We pretty much produce and record this on our own, Ryan. You and I do most of all of that. We take care of all those things. We do it all.
Right.
We do it all.
We do nothing. And I'm very concerned that it's not going to get recorded since he's on some other meeting or something right now. I'm like,
And I apologize for my listeners, Ryan. I don't know if you noticed, but my microphone my volume goes down to nothing every few minutes, and I try to turn it back up, and yeah, it's a little bit challenging. Hopefully Clifton can work out those issues as he's editing whatever he edits. Well, with that, Ryan, are you ready for question and answer? Do you have a sponsor for question and answer this week?
No, I do, but I don't.
I was on a phone call and I heard this.
Well, Basic Animal Health and Leonard Truck and Trailer have graciously agreed to be the sponsor for question and answer for the remainder of the year. But I do not have their write-ups yet.
Would you like me to help out with that?
You go right ahead, but I would just prefer Tiffany or Clint to send what they actually want.
This is easy. If you're in the Midwest, if you're anywhere and considering buying a Stock Show trailer, give Leonard Truck and Trailer a call. Very simple. If you want to look into Basic Animal Health supplements, there's lots of choices out there. They seem to continue to develop more and more, and they're very, very excited about the products. Look into them. Do the research. But no question, track record on trailer sales, it's incredible in terms of how many he sells, not just the Stock Show world, but I believe a variety of trailers. So please look them up. They're very generous and very helpful to keeping this podcast and the BTR JLA moving forward, and it is very much appreciated. With that, we should have some very difficult questions for you, Ryan. Very difficult. The first one comes from Julie. I absolutely love the podcast and hope to get to meet you guys in person someday. Does she not realize that she's better off just listening and not meeting either of us?
I would agree with that statement.
Last week, you discussed structural build. This last week got a lot. I received very little hate mail, but lots of questions and lots of comments about last week's episode. So we appreciate that. And so last week, you discussed structural build and how all look at it differently. You both touched on what has influenced why you prioritize a correct build. But could you answer that directly? What in your life has or does push you to make this a high priority? I think we kind of covered it, or at least I think we did to a certain degree.
I'm very confused on the question.
So I think what we're getting at, we talked about how environment plays a role in every judge's decisions. Maybe they grew up on a ranch that prioritized A, B, and C, or whatever my life experience is or was dictates maybe where I put priorities in the show ring. You're always very clear that you're going to put structural integrity pretty high in your priority list. What has made you put it there? Why is it that high?
I think the two biggest things is, like I alluded to on the podcast, back when I was showing very successfully, structure really didn't matter a lot, especially in steers. And so I would have to show a lot of the structural issues out of them, and that wasn't a whole lot of fun. And I also think probably just as much as that, or not more, is while I do judge a lot, I've spent as much time outside the show ring as I have inside the show ring, and it makes me crazy to see judges at all levels sit there and say, oh, this one's sound, or not comment on that the one that they're using to win clearly has a structural issue. I don't care if you want to use that one to win, but you need to at least say, look, I know this one pops his pasterns, but all the rest of this stuff that he does well, I think he should win the class despite that. And since very few people do that at all, it literally, I mean, I get very upset
when they just glaze over that and talk about the positive and
right on. Yeah, and like, or they say this one's sound and that one's clearly, I mean, maybe it's sound in your mind, and I understand that because it's your opinion, but you also need to bring up the fact that while it's sound in for you, there is still some issues here. And so because very few judges do that, I think that has brought it out in me as much as anyone else. And I do like reading structure on animals. I do like discussing it. And I think one of the reasons that I do discuss it as much as I do is because very few judges do discuss it. And that is probably as much as any reason on why I am prioritize it and talk about it as much as I do.
Very good. No, I can understand everything that you're talking about right there. And I received many, many texts regarding this, and different priorities and probably the most often response that I received from last week's episode, Ryan, was just what you said, that sometimes judges will just, they assume they see it and they just ignore it. They don't talk about it. Maybe they're in a mindset they should always just say positive and no negative. I'm not sure what the reason. Maybe it makes it easier to justify that animal winning in their mind rather than calling it out. But I am completely with you. Just call it out. And I can think about just influences in my life, I guess, coming up through the livestock judging ranks. The influences, the coaches that I had at that time placed a lot of emphasis on skeletal build and how it tied into longevity in the breeding herd. This is when there was still some tie to the commercial world and the real world, and that still lingers. Obviously, I still hold some of that fairly close. And I can even look at today when I'm working with a donor doe or donor cow, bull, buck, whatever it is, those that are built better do have a little more longevity in the program. It doesn't mean that we can't flush a doe that's too straight fronted or a buck that's use his semen that has issues or whatever. We can do those things. But I think if we look in just a little bit deeper, and those with structural issues, obviously, if they're bad, they're probably not going to be around quite as long. And anytime we have a structural flaw, you would assume that's putting some pressure on different joints, maybe causing some arthritis or any type of pain. And if we're trying to maximize embryo production and reproduction in general, that pain is going to cause cortisol levels. And there's no question that increased cortisol levels are going to be inversely related to reproductive performance. They're going to block some of the reproductive hormones. So you can go as deep as you want to go, but it's very hard to argue against a structurally correct animal. You can argue against how much muscle's too much, how much we need to open them up in different areas and a lot of different things. Do we really need them shallower chested than flanked? All of those things are very subjective and you can argue both ways. Ryan, it's pretty hard to argue against a structurally correct animal. In a terminal sense, maybe they don't need to be as structurally correct, but if it still has all those carcass traits and performance behind it and is structurally correct, I think it's all the better. So it's one of those to me that's just should be a constant, I think has been, but is looked at differently by different people and prioritized differently. But I believe it's always going to be there. Some of the other traits change back and forth just a little bit more, and it's more of a trend thing where there's some justification on the structural sound side of things. Long question. Thank you, Julie. A long answer on my part. John gives us the next question. Very short question. What can we do as exhibitors to encourage show managers to put a bit more thought into who is hired to sort shows, even at the highest levels? We address this all the time, Ryan, but that's pretty short and simple. I think last week's episode about some judges just glazing over structural soundness or correctness maybe instigated this. So what advice do you have for that show family out there? What can they do to try to influence some of these shows to put a little more thought into who they're bringing in as judges?
The only thing that any show family can do is try to make their voice heard in whatever way that they can, whether that is sending an email or going up to show management and having a rational, calm conversation about it. But I assure you, the more people that take the bull by the horns, literally, and address these concerns with show managers across the nation, that's the only way that it's ever going to change. Because, and I get there is some reluctance to doing that because you don't want to be seen as a troublemaker or you don't want to be labeled as a problem person or all this other stuff. But we've sat here and for years and years and years and just never said anything and never done anything. And the problem doesn't get fixed. They don't put more thought and effort into it. It doesn't change. The only way to do that is to make your opinion and make your voice heard, whether by email or going up in person and talking to them. It's like, look, things got to be different here. And I know that's not probably the answer he wants to hear. We're still in. We had an episode a couple of weeks ago about ranking the judge system and all this other stuff. Can that help? Sure. Are we going to try to do something about that? Yes, we are. Right now, before as of today, on this date, I am saying the only thing that you can do right now is convince you and everybody else that sees the problems and understands to make your voice heard.
Absolutely. Perfect. Perfect answer, Ryan. And I think most show families feel like they have absolutely zero input. And if
we, because they do have zero input and it's bullshit.
Yeah. And if they don't, but because it continues, but if they would all, not all, if you have any concern, if you would approach it in a very professional manner, and there are many people that do that, show families, I think it would make some difference. I think it would help the cause. And I can assure you those show managers that may be listening that if we bring in better judges, if we make these shows as user friendly, and I think most show managers are doing their best to do some of these things, you are going to be rewarded. If we bring in the customer's input and try to keep the customer happy, the customer is the show family, things will continue to grow and get better. It's just that simple. That doesn't just cover a show. That's our entire industry. As breeders, as show managers, as brokers, traders, whatever we may be, the better we can accommodate what those show families want and need, the better we can accommodate providing a tool for their children to mature and learn so many positive things in terms of work ethic, responsibility, and the list goes on and on. The better we facilitate that at every level, the better this moves forward. And numbers hopefully continue to grow or come back at least to previous levels and then hopefully grow. It's all positive. So let's all do our best. Let's all put a little more effort. We can do better. No matter what show manager's out there that's putting the most effort they can in hiring a judge, we can still do a little more to try to even do better yet. So let's all do it, including myself and Ryan. The next question comes from Sue. Love the podcast and appreciate what this has done for so many in the stock show world. I am concerned with the woke attitude that seems to be coming into even our smaller country school district. We have a strong ag program, yet it still appears that the administration has an impact on what they're allowed to do and not do in terms of contest and participation. What can we do to push back on the woke society, I guess, is where they're trying to go with this. And Ryan, I'm going to let you answer it, and then I can jump in because we're in a pretty small school district. But please, I think it's touching everything.
It is touching everything. But I mean, I'm not trying to I really do not have an answer for this lady on this. I'm just being honest. I mean, again, make your voice heard, all that other stuff. But I don't. Because I don't have kids, I don't deal with school districts, I don't deal with any of that. So I'm probably, obviously, the one of the two that is not going to be able to answer this because I don't have children and I don't deal with school districts. So you go right ahead.
Well, I'm happy to try. I think you would be a good advocate to go visit to some of the school boards, Ryan, that would fight a little bit against this.
I made an active decision not to have children, and it's the best one I've ever made in my life.
I will not argue that. Sue, I think we all see it, and I don't know how large your school is. We're sitting in a very small school district, and I think we see some of the same. I know just visiting with our kids when they return home from school and some of the things that they talk about. I'm not saying it's filtered all the way through the ag program or the ag program's a lot different, but in general, the teaching body, I think education just leans that way in general. I'm not saying all educators. I was an educator for a very long time. And I can promise you, I was as conservative in my thoughts and positions then as I am now. But in general, the education system leans that direction. You would think at the smaller schools that maybe you wouldn't feel it as much, but I think we're going to feel it everywhere. I encourage you to speak up. I encourage you to try to get people in positions to run for the school board that maybe share your values and maybe you need to run for the school board. I think that's the only way it's going to change. And even with that, it's hard because the pool of educators out there that are going to apply for certain positions, especially at the smaller schools, sometimes you don't have a lot of options And we're very happy to get an educator in there, especially when you get some good ones. You want to do everything you can to keep them. But it's a tough situation. Only thing I can say is try to speak up and have as much influence as you possibly can on who's sitting on the school board and maybe what policies are being pushed or what direction things are going. And it concerns me. We see it so much at the higher education level, at the universities particularly, and there's a big pushback right now. How much value is in that college degree? And I was a college educator for a long time, and I'm not afraid to say this. I heard a very strong quote, that college degree that's hanging on the walls of a lot of offices is not much more today, depending on the program they went through, than just a receipt for paying X amount to go through college. And that's not good, but that's another topic for another time. But Sue, please be active, just like anything else. Do what you can and speak up. If you don't speak up, nothing is going to change, and it definitely won't go the direction you want outside of just random chance under that situation. With that said, Ryan, that concludes today's episode. All of you out there, please be safe until next week.
Y'all come back now, you hear?